Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
And I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're talking Autechre's 1994 sophomore LP, Amber, plus the anti-EP released just 2 months before Amber, where Rob Brown and Sean Booth get quote-unquote political for the first and only time. We are coming fresh off of the Sign live stream, which was a couple hours ago, and it seems that they have just gone ahead and released Sign a little early. I wanted to mention that I think what we're going to do is sometime early next week, sort of an emergency first reactions podcast, so keep an eye out on that. And before we get started on Amber, let me just say thanks so much to everybody who's already checked out the show, sent us emails, left us ratings and reviews in your podcast app of choice. If you like the show, do us a huge favor and leave us a 5-star rate and review, or just tell an Autechre loving friend about us. Also, we're going to get to some of your emails at the end of this episode, but I've got this dream of devoting a few bonus episodes entirely to your opinions and hot takes. So please email us, gonkcastpod@gmail.com, or tweet us at gonkcastpod. You'll find all that stuff in the show notes of every episode. Okay, on to Amber. Dan, what background information do we need to know?
Yeah, so Amber was Autechre's second album, released by Warp Records November 7th, 1994. In May of that year, the group contributed one track to Warp's Artificial Intelligence 2 compilation, but the Artificial Intelligence series was officially over, and Amber is generally regarded as the point at which Autechre came into their own. Rob Brown has called Amber, quote, genuinely the first album we put out on Warp, as opposed to 1993's Incunabula, which was more of a compilation of older material. Though he's also called Incunabula and Amber, quote, cheesy. But we should mention that he later walked back to his comments, explaining that the earlier albums were, quote, perhaps more simple, but not in a shit way.
Yeah, I really don't even know what that means. It's basically like saying they're cheesy, but I didn't mean that. It's like if I called you an idiot, but I didn't mean it in a mean way. Like, well,
yeah,
I don't even know what he's talking about. I think we should mention also that we are skipping over the Bass Cadet EP, or the Bass Cad, EP as it's titled for some reason, which was released in 1994. You know, weirdly, just a bunch of remixes by Autechre and some other artists of that first single off of the previous year's Incunabula. You know, wasn't our favorite track on Incunabula, maybe our least favorite track on that album. Doesn't seem that super significant to understanding the larger history of Autechre, but do let us know if it's like secretly great and we should dive deep into it. Again, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. As far as the reception of Amber goes, I think it's fair to say that it's been somewhat divisive. AllMusic gave it a 4.5 stars out of 5 and called it a, quote, great leap forward, but Pitchfork gave it a 7.9 out of 10. It's just a little lower than Adele, if you keep track. And they said it hasn't aged that well, though weirdly, they later named it the 16th best IDM album of all time. What the hell is going on with Pitchfork? It's got a respectable 3.67 and it's bolded on Rate Your Music, but it seems like there are as many people who adore it as there are people who find it needlessly cold and difficult. I think we should talk about that for a second, Dan. Like, what is your sense of the kind of stature of Amber? You know, like, what do Autechre fans think about this album?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely not the, like, you know, it's Tri Repete is the one that's like, you know, everybody I think agrees is like the go-to, you know, starting point or whatever. But it seems like Amber is sort of like, people either like really love it or just kind of, you know, dismiss it, you know, like I think it's a lot of people's like second Autechre record or one that, you know, gets, you know, suggested as the second one from people who like it. But then, you know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people, like, I was looking through some of the reviews on Rate Your Music earlier today, and it's like weirdly either like 4.5, or, you know, 4.5 stars, or like 2.5. You know, that seems like the range. There, you know, there's not, I don't see that many threes, you know, kind of thing. It's really sort of strange.
Yeah, it's super weird because I feel like my whole life, I mean, my early Autechre life, I had this sense of Amber as like one of their early masterpieces, mm-hmm. for sure. But then it was like, yeah, as I was kind of like diving in and doing some reading on reviews and stuff like these last 2 weeks, I was just seeing a lot of negativity as well. My thought is that maybe it's kind of like the challenging, you know, certain subset of hardcore fans only like swear by it, you know. It's kind of like maybe a cult status within Autechre's discography, and yet it's like so early that it seems like just such an important and monumental part of Autechre's. It's a little confusing, honestly. But you know, as always, we're working our way through Autechre's entire discography, and some stuff is going to be a little more new to us than others. So let's go over our own, you know, previous familiarity and maybe previous opinions on Amber.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that this was the second Autechre record I ever heard. You know, after Tri-Repute. I can't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure. You know, it's one that I almost just can't remember not, you know, listening to, kind of thing. I've always kind of loved it. You know, it's one of those records. I talked a little bit on the last episode. You know, I've got like just this handful of records that I frequently go through, you know, when I'm reading and stuff. And Amber's like been in that rotation for a long time. It's also in my like, I listen to a record when I go to sleep every night. Amber's also in my like sleep rotation. So it's really made it into like two of my, my big things that I do. So yeah, I sort of have like a long love and almost from the beginning sort of love, for Amber. Yeah.
Is it like would you describe it as one of your favorite Autechre releases or not that wouldn't go that far?
No, I would. Yeah, I think it's definitely like a masterpiece. In fact, you know, when getting prepped for this show and everything, I was sort of surprised to see that there was some division in there. Like, yeah, always sort of like, I don't know, in my own, you know, personal world, I always sort of thought everybody agreed that it was, you know, I mean,
yeah, me too.
Maybe everyone wouldn't give it a 10 out of 10, but, you know, I thought it was, like, widely regarded as, you know, at least a very high ranking, you know, from everyone.
Yeah, yeah, I had that sense, too. I mean, for me, it's like, you know, like I mentioned last time, I started with Tri-Repute, loved it, went back to Incunabula, loved it, then moved forward to Amber, and found it kind of too tough. Like, I really just it wouldn't click with me even back then. You know, I moved right on to like LP5 and stuff and like continued finding so much to love about Autechre, but never really got into Amber. And it sort of dawned on me these last 2 weeks doing this that, like, you know, I've probably never just been devoted to Amber like ever in my life. You know, it's the kind of thing that when I'm in an early Autechre mood, I throw on Incunabula, I move on to Amber. You know, since the Warp tapes came out, you know, I'll go back to those, you know, but I never ever like just choose to put it on its own. I never listen to it like on repeat and like really think about it. You know, it's like one of those things we talked about last time where it's like when I'm in that mood, it comes on, but I have never given it its own due. So this was, you know, an interesting and fun challenge. And, you know, I got to say that I like, you know, it felt new to me in that way because I feel like I had never like really, really focused on it before. And I don't know, we'll get into it, but it's a tough album. So I was like really listening a lot. I was like, damn, I gotta make this thing click. Maybe it's just never actually clicked in my whole life. Listen to it a shit ton. And it's been a weird last couple of days because I've been going back and forth like Amber Van Halen. Amber Van Halen. That's been an interesting situation. But really, really listen to this like a million times to the point where I probably have some like I've probably overthought it at this point. I think I've got some weird conspiracy theories to share. So as with Incunabula, I want to complain quickly about how every review of Amber, you know, either, you know, references their future work in some way, either that this has no indication of what they're going to become or that it has these interesting, you know, indications. And I want to try to give it its due, at least for a little bit, just like we did last time. But I do want to ask, Dan, I mean, do you think it's fair? Like, can we compare it to Incunabula?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you know, if you were alive, or I mean, we were alive, if you were aware of Autechre in 1994, you know, like that would be a natural thing to do, you know. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't, in 1994, you wouldn't be, you know, comparing it to LP5, obviously, because it didn't exist. Right. I think it's fair. You know, I mean, you do that with pretty much every band. You know, I'm sure when With the Beatles came out, people were comparing it to Please Please Me. You know, I think that's completely natural, and I'm going to allow it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that we are, part of this podcast, we're trying to build our knowledge, like kind of take the long view of Autechre. So I think that makes sense. So let's get into it then. How would you describe to a new, but maybe they've listened to Incunabula, listener of Amber? What does Amber sound like?
I think overall, you know, not all the tracks will fall into this, and we'll get into it a little bit. But I think overall, you can refer to this album as being very dark, and much more like sort of ambient than Incunabula is. Mm-hmm. You know, we're really moving away from what was there of you know, regular, you know, quote unquote dance music from Incunabula. You know, we're still not like a million miles away or anything, but we're definitely moving away from it. And you know, in that process, we're getting dark, we're getting cold, we're getting ambient, we're getting spacious. You know,
yeah, it's like a pretty, I don't know, it's conflicting, I feel like, because, you know, the words like glacial come to mind, skeletal, you know, it does feel like pretty cold, and yet it also feels like pretty menacing, pretty evil. I think that it's also, you know, it's like skeletal, but at the same time, pretty dense. I think, you know, you mentioned ambient, and it does feel like a lot more entering that ambient territory because it is so dense. You know, what I notice is that every sound seems to have like delays and reverbs on it and stuff. Like those effects are as central to the sound of it as like the actual notes that are being hit and stuff like that. It just feels like you're listening to like a haze of sound all the time. And yet it's very different from Incunabula, because I feel like Incunabula, you know, we talked about how you would have these kind of like really intricate beats and then this like huge soaring synth, you know, these synth pads, you know, like way over the top. It just made it feel like this really towering monolithic thing. This feels like pretty cramped and claustrophobic to me. Like I don't think of a skyscraper. I think of like being in like in a little lab in a tundra on another planet or something like that. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, like, and what you said about like, you know, those little reverb touches and you know, just like repeats and stuff that go in the back. That, you know, there's all these like little tiny sounds. It makes it, you know, it's a perfect you know, headphone kind of record. And in fact, that's why I have it in my like sleep, you know, rotation, because I love these records that have like so much of that. You know, you can lay down, close your eyes, and like all you pay attention to is like the sounds you're hearing, and you know, and you hear these little like, you know, a snare drum, or you know, a drum sound, I guess. They don't really use, you know, regular snare drum sounds much, but you know, you hear that go on forever or something, and you know, it's something that you may not notice if you're just listening, you know, on a stereo in your living room or something, you know, half paying attention, or even, you know, while you're reading a book or something. I think it like really rewards this you know, close listening experience.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, actually. We talked about the lack of sound design on Incunabula, that a lot of times they were using, you know, instruments like the 808, you know, drum machine or whatever. There would be like these synth pads that sound like pretty, I don't know, like unaffected, you know, like kind of your standard synth pad type sounds. Maybe they didn't sound so standard in 1993, but they definitely do now. But here there is like a lot of, I don't know, every sound like sounds tinkered with and like twisted in such a bizarre way. Like,
no, exactly. Yeah,
I noticed that like the all the percussion is somewhere between percussion and melody, or like all the melodies are somewhere between melody and noise. You know, like you think about like just right off the bat with Foil, the first track here, you know, that like snare that is going through the whole thing, it is so stretched out and like has so much phaser on it that it's almost a melody, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like, it's not just a snare, you know, it's like something else.
No, exactly.
It's like static or like a hiss or something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, on Incunabula, there was like definitely some things I recognized. You know, we talked about how, you know, one of the tracks was a little ruined for me, you know, by like having that I think it was like the cowbell sound from the 808, right. You know, like just things that I knew. And I mean, I think even if I was a little better at you know, knowing sense, I think you could even pick out, you know, what some of the keys, you know, were. Here on Amber, I feel like I don't see how you could know, you know, like you said, you know, maybe it is a drum sound from an 808 or something, but it's at least run through.
Yeah.
At least one effect, probably, you know, much more. I mean, like glitch, I think, you know, like there's almost no like actual percussion, you know, like a regular percussion sound,
right,
on
right.
That I think that's the most, like you're talking about, like sometimes, you know, like the percussion is almost just a part of the melody. And I think that glitch is like where that is.
Glitch? Yeah.
Incredibly apparent.
It's a perfect example of like, I don't know what to call that main motif, like a rhythmic pattern or a melody. Like,
no, yeah,
somewhere
exactly.
It's just in the middle. But yeah, we're also getting into this. I mean, this is going to be like a fun part, not to break the rule, but of this whole podcast is like, you get into this realm with Autechre where you're like, you can't just say like the snare, you know, it's like some sound that is sort of serving as a snare like purpose, but it sounds more like a giant sheet of metal being like waved, or like a soda can being opened underwater, or, you know, something like completely bizarre, like to even try to describe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and then, you know, rarely are they even using 4/4. So it's not even like, oh, you know, that percussive noise on the 2 and the 4 has to be the snare. So, you know, it gets so beyond that. And I'm talking about the sound design thing. You sent me like the first thing you could find about Autechre in the magazine The Wire. And in it, there's a quote by Booth where he says that we invent sounds. And I think that is like, that's the like essence of Autechre, I think. And I mean, definitely the reason that I enjoy the band so much. You know, I love electronic music from lots of people, and I like things that are, we talked about it a little bit last time. I love like traditional, you know, synthesizer music and everything. But I just really love this, like making noises and sounds that you've like literally never heard before. It's just, you know, it's so great.
I mean, the question is like, are we fully there or are we kind of getting there? Because, you know, you mentioned this earlier, and this is kind of where I think I landed, is that what you have are possibly pretty basic sounds just fucked with until they are like unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like if, you know, if for some reason like Warp lost all the tapes to Enki and Obula and they were like, could you please re-record it in 1994? It would have just sounded like this because they wouldn't have been satisfied with like these more basic sounds, and they would have just tinkered with everything until it was like sort of unrecognizable. So it's like, it's, you can tell that it's like some sort of snare sound from some drum machine, but that it's been like stretched out and it's got all these like digital artifacts or something, you know, and it sounds more like a, like scratching or like a rattling or like, you know, not a recognizable snare, but you can tell that's where it started, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, this record, even, you know, like Montreal, the second track, that one's not too far away from Enki and Obula.
Right.
You know, like it definitely is like, it doesn't sound as, and I don't mean this in that as bad of a way as it sounds, but it doesn't sound as off the shelf, you know, like it definitely sounds like, you know, it came off the shelf and then it was put through a couple other things. But I think you're right. You know, like nothing here sounds like 100% like completely you've like made from scratch. You know, what does that come from? You know, you could usually tell like what is supposed to be the drum, what is supposed to be, you know, this or that. Maybe not all the time. Like I was saying, I think glitch is like the, and I'm gonna break the rule, but I think glitch is the biggest like clue to the future, because in that song, I just feel like it's like real Autechre shit, you know, like it's hard to tell like what's supposed to be what. So I think we're getting there. But you know, we're not 100% there yet. I mean, like Silverside has a vocal sample, and like, you could tell it's a vocal sample. You can't really understand what it's saying, or at least I can't.
Right.
But you know what it is. And I just feel like that's something that is unlikely to happen these days.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to ask, like, you know, because AllMusic calling it a great leap forward, a lot of publications, honestly, calling it this, like, great leap forward. And, you know, I do agree with that. But at the same time, you can hear that it's rooted right there, you know, that it's you know, you mentioned Montreal. I think, like, there are a couple other moments here where it's, like, got a very, you know, it sounds like an Incunabula track that's, again, been, like, tinkered with or messed with. But I do really appreciate that. I really appreciate, like, these interesting new sounds that are things that I don't know how to describe immediately, or, like, you know, I just sort of dabble with synths and drum machines and stuff. But, like, when I listen to Incunabula, I'm not trying to sound like a badass because they did this in 1993, but, like, I could figure out how to make, you know, a lot of the sounds on that record.
Mm-hmm,
like,
yeah.
I could, you know, I can make those tracks. It makes sense to me. I'm like, okay, there's a clear bass part. There's a clear, like, synth lead. There's a clear, you know, snare, hi-hat, you know. Here, you really get into, like, a how the fuck are they doing this territory, which is going to be, like, a trademark spoiler alert of Autechre from here on out. But, you know, another question is, I mean, do you agree with all the, you know, discussions? I mean, we're going to get into some of these specific tracks and stuff, but we're still dealing with that overall sound. Do you agree that it's, like, difficult, that it's challenging, that, you know, it's just so cold that it's hard to get into?
I mean, I guess I can understand that. You know, if it would depend where you're coming to this from. You know, if you've only ever listened to, like, you know, popular electronic music or whatever, then yeah, I could see it being a little difficult, because you're right, you know, there's not, like, a ton of those sounds that ground you, that you, like, recognize, you know, that you've heard, you know, like Incunabula, you know, there's sounds in that, like, if you listen to hip hop, you know, you're, mm-hmm. while they might not be used the same way as in hip hop or whatever, you still have that ground, you know, you'll recognize things, like, you know, little tricks or whatnot. Here we're getting further from that, where I feel like you don't have that sort of grounding. I think the chilliness of it could, you know, if you're not into or not used to music that is, like, that dark, you know, but before I got into Autechre and stuff, like, I still do and did love, you know, like, post-punk and stuff a lot. And I think, like, here, you know, that kind of, like, the coldness and everything, I feel like was never, like, a big issue with me. And I think that's why I, you know, took to this record, you know, easily, like I said at the beginning, because I was sort of already used to, you know, like, where someone might have the grounding of hip hop for Incunabula. I feel like, and maybe it's not their intention, but I feel like the I have the grounding of post-punk and, you know, real goth sound stuff.
yeah. It does have kind of a goth sound, honestly, because of all that reverb and stuff. It's like, you know, that is the thing that struck me most, like, just listening to this over and over again the last 2 weeks, is, like I said, it's very claustrophobic. It is very dense. And because there are so many, like, again, just so weird to me how so many drum sounds are, like, being stretched out in, like, a sustained way, you know? So it's more of, like, a hiss or a scratch or something. And it's, like, there are points on this record where it gets, like, really cluttered with, like, you know, delays and tons of reverb and, like, these hissing, like, you know, it feels like almost like you're listening to static or, like, you're listening to white noise at really dense parts of this. It makes it hard to, like, grab things. And, you know, like I said, it's lacking, I think, that sort of formulaic construction that Incunabula had, which was, like, your bass part, your synth lead, your kick, your, you know, there are some, like, really strangely, you know, like, tracks that it's like, it sounds like half of the rhythmic instruments are snares or something like that, you know, like, just really weird arrangements. It makes it harder, one, to, like, even single things out to kind of get into, but also to just kind of, like, know what to focus on. I always think about, you know, I feel like Foil just sets the mood for this record so well, because it's like the thing that is so in your face is just, like, that snare sound, like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, and you, like, almost can't even, like, pay attention to anything else because there's just, like, this white noise, like, over and over again, like, right in your face. There is a melody in there, like, barely. I mean, like, that sort of, like, droney noise that runs through it is, again, almost just a, a sound more than a like chord, you know, but you almost can't even latch onto it because you are so preoccupied with this like hissing, like abrasive sound. So, okay. Before we get to the individual tracks though, I meant to do this last time, totally forgot, but we should talk a little bit about like the overall aesthetic. I mean, Amber has a, what I would call a pretty iconic cover art, you know, of these like weird cliffs in Turkey, is it? You know, they look like totally alien or something.
Yeah,
like,
for, off it another is really planet. Strange.
But, you know, I guess I didn't review it, but Ottegger don't typically, you know, use a photograph of like the Earth for their for their album covers and stuff. So I wonder what you make of like just the aesthetic of Amber, both, you know, the think about the cover, think about the album title, think about the track titles, maybe.
Yeah, it's strange, you know, with that cover, with the track titles being like actual words for the most part.
Yeah,
I think actually all of them are words. It's strangely like human, which sounds like weird to say, but yeah. but for Ottegger, you know, it that is like sort of strange. I think you're right. I you know, I email us if I'm wrong, but you know, off the top of my head, I don't think anything else has like an actual photograph. You know, none of the albums do, at least. Maybe an EP is slipping by me, but it is strange. I honestly love the cover. You know, it is like so cool, and you know, it being the Earth but like seeming so alien is strange. But you know, it almost like doesn't fit the record, because the, you know, we talked about like the record's like really kind of dark, cold, you know, claustrophobic, and then we've got, you know, the covers, these colors like blue, this like pinkish and this white color, you know, for the most part, and you know, a spacious sky, you know, it doesn't, the cover doesn't feel, you know, claustrophobic or cold or dark or anything to me. But it is sort of hard to separate because it is kind of so iconic that it's hard to, you know, take them apart from each other.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it does have like this otherworldly feel, and yeah, I don't know. It's easy to like overread into like album covers and stuff. It might just been a cool picture, but it feels appropriate because again, these feel like, you know, this whole album feels like it's constructed from sort of recognizable sounds that have just been like twisted beyond recognition. And when you're looking at this cover, you're thinking like, this is the Earth, I think, but I don't recognize any part of the Earth.
Yeah.
You know, that looks like
yeah,
that.
That's a good point. Yeah. I didn't think of it that way.
It's sort of fitting. You know, and I think, you know, just so we mention it, like when, like Inky and Avila, not one of my favorite cover arts. It maybe looks like a little bit of like a, you know, early 90s idea of like cool digital art or something, but I don't know, this is like the first like I think really iconic Ottegger cover, but we should definitely make a point to talk about those you know, moving forward. Would you describe this as, you know, a lot of people say it's difficult because it's like has no emotion, but I find it pretty dark and menacing. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I find it dark and menacing. Yeah, you know, definitely. I think you can read emotion into it if you want to. I mean, I think a lot of people have a lot of problem with a lot of electronic music because they think it's emotionless, you know, with there being no words or you know, natural instruments. But I think that's a lot of times just, you know, people's misunderstanding or not being, you know, familiar enough with the genre.
Yeah I mean, I guess we can use this to sort of transition into the individual tracks, but first let me quiz you like I did last week. What do you think? There are three bolded tracks on Ray Your Music, if Ray Your Music is anything close to consensus, three tracks that are the like highest rated, this considered the standouts here by the fans here. What do you think they are?
It again, it's hard to just not pick what I would say. I'm going to go, I think Glitch is just so good. Maybe Montreal, maybe Foil. I'll go Foil, Montreal, Glitch as being bolded.
Well, pretty wrong. It's Montreal, Nil, and either Tear Tear or Tear Tear. No idea.
Or Tear Tear. Or tear tear.
True.
Could be four different things.
And I seem to remember that, you know, our Autechr on Reddit did a kind of like a Survivor thing where people would like eliminate one track off each album, like one at a time by voting. And I think Nil ended up being like the survivor of, or the favorite track here, which is interesting. So I want to ask, what are your highlights here?
I mean, I sort of already said it, but Glitch is like, I think Glitch is the first like track from Autechr that is like exactly what I always wanted in music, you know? Like I said, it's just all these like, I love how like minimal it is. It's really just like this very small section that mostly repeats, you know. I mean, there's a little bit of change here and there, but for the most part,
gradual change.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that. I love that like glacial change in music. I love minimalism. I love the way the like percussion is like also sort of the melody. You know, it's like so hard to like differentiate like what is supposed to be what in that song. I just, you know, absolutely love that. I also really like
another,
go ahead,
let me just say another thing I really like about the track, and actually this album in general, is like I complained a little bit about how Inky Nebula has this slightly like formulaic quality where it's like a couple loops or patterns that they really like, and they're kind of just sitting behind the boards and they're fading things in, fading things out, tweaking, you know, twiddling some knobs, tweaking the cutoff, tweaking the resonance here and there. You just never forget that that's what you're listening to, is some people like standing there turning some knobs, you know, having already composed the thing, of course. But, you know, here I feel like it is just so much, it just feels like every song here is so, you know, so composed, like so, so worked on. So it's like Glitch, you know, instead of like just that kind of standard, like, oh, this thing comes in, then some things drop out. It does stay pretty like built, you know, constructed the whole time. And what you get are these like really slight tweaks, and like, you know how like sometimes like some sound will sort of get added where it's like this metallic ringing off of some of the percussive hits and stuff, you know. And it's like, it's just an awesome little touch. And I feel like a lot of this record has like just these little touches where it's like, it's not that they were just like behind the knobs like, oh, it'd be sick to kind of fade this in here. It was more like that, you know, second, you know, 36, there needs to be two metallic rings on these two specific things, and then 3 minutes and 4 seconds we need to turn the, you know, it's like it's really labored over.
Inky Nebula has like sort of a almost like jammy kind of feel, you know, like it does, it feels like a couple guys, you know, behind these instruments, whereas you're right, like Amber feels like a composed meaning, like I don't want to say meaningful as if Inky Nebula is not, but I mean like every sound is like purposeful, I guess is the word I'm really looking for. Like there's really nothing on this album that's like unnecessary, you know, like it almost feels like every sound you're hearing like deserves to be there, and it is like necessary to the record itself. Another track I like a lot is Further. It's just another,
I love Further. I was gonna mention this one for sure.
It's just another one where that, like, you know what you talked about, like just listening to like how the things ring out and stuff, like this song is so like wet, like there it's just like dripping in like this reverb and effect.
It's got like these like spidery like tinkling sounds that are like very spooky, honestly, like Halloween style.
It's like these weird, like it almost sounds like water dropping, but like metallic water or something, you know. It is like very Halloween.
That fucking, like, the best part of the song is like that, like, you know, these synths rise and then this like drone bomb, you know what I'm talking about, like just like, and it's like the sickest thing. You know, that if I was living in 1994, I would be like, this is the sickest thing I've heard in my life. And I love how, like, you know, because you start this track, you see it's like the longest track on the album at 10 minutes. And you think like, okay, this is going to be like the wind of of this one, like the kind of difficult, like overly long middle of the album thing, to punish anybody who's gotten too comfortable. But it's actually kind of two tracks. It ends, you know, the rhythmic parts end like almost halfway through, and then we get like an ambient track, and it like sort of continues these like huge crashes of drones with like, you know, these kind of haunting like synth pad things, but then like a new kind of super echoey synth melody comes in, and like it becomes like this really beautiful, you know, not to spoil anything, but listening to Sign today, I was thinking like, damn, like the end of Further, it has a lot in common with these like very melodic, lush, like synthy ambient songs. You know, it's like, it starts to sound, I mean, this is like where I start to overthink things, but it sounds like, you know, the like toward the end, like waves crashing on a alien planet, like digital waves. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but you know, it's like so otherworldly, I think, like really incredible.
No, I think that is, you know, to contradict myself, I think this is the song that sort of like moves the most, you know, like and I mean it being 10 minutes, but you know, like it still feels like minimal in the sense that, like, you know, while you're in, I don't know, it's like the motion's not like overly apparent. Like it's not like, you know, a fast pace, like the song's changing all the time kind of thing, but it like slowly gets to a whole nother like thing, you know, in sort of a glacial way, which is like so great, you know, that's the kind of stuff that like makes electronic music like worth it, you know, other than, you know, or organic music or whatever.
Yeah. I think another thing is that like on this album, outros matter. Like,
yeah.
On Incunabula, I totally understand this because I once, you know, when I was like younger, I when I was discovering like Autechre and all of these warp artists, I wanted to start like a quote unquote electronic project with my buddy, but we didn't like have any synths or know how to do anything. So we were kind of just like recording loops of like real instruments and stuff and piecing them together and everything. And like, and I found that it was so easy to be like, we would like build this song and then I would just be listening back to it. And I would realize that like, you know, just letting things play until we stopped recording sounded really cool every time, because it'd be like, oh, you know, we only recorded like this many bars of the hi-hat, but then when it drops out, you can just hear the bass and the piano going. And then it's like, then the piano goes and it's just like the bass and some claps, you know, and you just kind of like let things like run out. I feel like Incunabula did that with almost every track. Like just, these are sick loops that we made and we've done the whole track. We sort of jammed it, like you mentioned, and now we're just letting things kind of come to an end. And it sounds cool that they each get like a little spotlight moment. But here on Amber, again, it's like very constructed. It's very composed. And like the outro is not just the loops coming to an end. It's like actually fully formed, like thought out, interesting ambient pieces. I think of like, you know, this track Piezo or however you pronounce that, track six here, you know, that track is like, it almost feels like Glitch in the beginning, because it's got like a very like strange like tribal-ish metallic drum thing going on, and then you get like a pretty beautiful almost string sounding melody which sort of calls back to Silverside a little bit, and then it kind of turns into an ambient thing like pretty organically. And it's not that it's just come to an end, you know, it's that like the ambient thing is just as important as like the opening, you know, fractal drum thing that was going on, just as important as like the string section that was going on. Love that about this album. Were there any other highlights you wanted to spotlight here?
You know, I love the whole record so much, but I really just Glitch and Further were like the two that I really wanted to dive into. I do love, I think it's Piezo. I you know, it's the same.
Oh, okay.
That's the word Piezo. That, you know, a contact mic is a Piezo electric microphone. I think that's what it's referring to.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But yeah, I mean, if you want to go ahead and get to the weak points.
Well, let me just spotlight, you know, because I did want to definitely mention Further, but I wanted to spotlight also Tear, or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That is a great one.
That is like an absolutely doomy bass riff. Like, it is so like metal almost. It is so cool. And it's like, it just gets like more and more like crushing and menacing. And then it does this incredible thing where it like slows down and just opens up into a whole new sound world. And then like suddenly you can really hear like these crazy like tribal drum fills and stuff that are just ringing out. I mean, it's like, you know, to break the rule a little bit, I think they you hear it a little bit here, but they really start to get interested in like taking a song and like warping it into a completely different shape, you know, for a while. And I feel like this is like a masterclass in that. It's just so incredible. It's like so menacing and then just like completely transforms into something totally different.
I think it's like such a excellent closer, like because of that too. Like for the record.
Yeah, that is true. In fact, this record almost has like two closers because I feel like both Nil and Terror would be like excellent crescendos mm-hmm. of this whole thing. And it's just awesome to get both. I did also want to mention, I want to get your opinion on, I talked about like, you know, the emotionlessness of this record, which I totally understand. You know, we talked about how, you know, a lot of the synth sounds like on Incunabula, they would be huge and just like give you that melody, you know, but here they feel like so much thinner, like so much more like in the background, like part of the fabric of the thing and, you know, harder to latch onto. And yet you get this track Slip, which is like the prettiest, like cutest, bouncy little synth workout. I mean, do you feel like this song fits? I mean, it's very catchy. Do you think it fits on Amber?
Well, you know, that's a good transition into getting to the weak points, because Slip is, I think, okay. my weak point on this record. Because interesting. Yeah, it's a good song. You know, don't get me wrong. When basically on any of these episodes, when I say it's a weak point, I love this record. I'd probably give it a 10 out of 10. So, you know, wow. I'm just having to be picky here. But I just think it's the like sort of least original, you know, song on this record, because I feel it feels like very Aphex Twin. Like that real bouncy kind of, you know, rubber ball kind of, you know, synth sound. You know, if this was a track on its own and you told me it was a brand new Aphex Twin song, I wouldn't question you, you know, at all, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, it's still good. It kind of doesn't fit the mood of Amber, because, it's the only song that doesn't have, like really any sort of darkness. You know, I guess Montreal is a little, you know, lighter than a lot of things, but you know, it's at the beginning of the record.
It's still pretty dark.
It still has some darkness, and I think we're working our way into it here. But Slip, I don't know, it just feels a little out of place.
It's the only track that I like. I mean, I do this with pretty much every song on Incunabula, but on Amber, Slip is like the only time that I notice that my foot is tapping,
you know?
Which is weird, but what I just, you know, so like in the beginning listening to this a lot this week, I was like, man, this kind of like comes out of nowhere. But then I ended up deciding that, you know, and this is kind of like a crackpot theory, like I said, overthinking things, but like when you get to, you know, like Yolquin, that has a sort of Aphexian melody, and it almost feels like a slowed down, like stretched out version of Slip, like if Yolquin was just faster or something, and you know, obviously had more percussion and stuff, it would have like a little bit of a bounce to it and sort of like a pretty sound. And I kind of like started to develop again this crackpot theory, this like total conspiracy shit, where like a lot of this record is about slowing things down and like stretching things out. I love like on, you know, it comes up a lot on that, I can't remember how you pronounce it, Piazio or whatever you said. But also Further, and also like Nil, like I said earlier, those like digital artifacts, it sounds like a stretched out like sample or something, you know, where it's got like a lot of that like lo-fi, like kind of digitized sound. There are a lot of tracks that just make me think of like, you know, and these snares being stretched out to the point where they're just like hisses of white noise and stuff. So I started to develop this theory that the record is about, I don't know, time travel or something, slowing down time, and that you need Slip so that it can get warped into slow motion by Yolquin. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
I'll give it to you. Yeah, if Yolquin was completely different, it would be like Slip. Yeah, I understand. Okay. I understand you.
Okay, good. Glad we agree on that. All right. I wanted to sort of quiz you real quick on, we already started to get into it, but on the weak spots here, there is one song that that clearly has the lowest, but let's say like the lowest two. What do you think are the lowest two rated songs on Amber according to Rager Music?
I think maybe 9, just because it's sort of a interlude-y kind of thing, and then I don't know, Silverside maybe.
Well, the second lowest is Yolquin, okay. And the lowest, you will be surprised to hear, is Glitch.
Oh my god. That really does surprise me. Like I said, that's like by far my favorite song on this record.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, I find Glitch a little challenging. I think like by design. It's one of those things where it's like hard to figure out what to grab onto. But if you are into the sound design part of Autechre, I think there is a lot to love there. I just feel like, I don't know, if you're listening to Amber, like maybe you're not quite in that mood. So then when you get hit by this, it's like, feels more challenging than it would be on a different album or something like that. I don't know. It's like part of the context. I think that also applies to like Montreal, which I agree could probably fit on Incunabula, but in the context of Amber, it sounds like a little darker and more yeah. alien and stuff. Let me think. Did you say, you mentioned Slip. Were there any other like kind of weak spots here for you?
You know, I don't like absolutely love Silverside. I think the vocal
talk about
sample
that. It's a weird song.
Yeah, the vocal sample it's okay, but it's like the thing that feels a little dated here. I don't know. It's like I was thinking about like how Rob called it cheesy or whatever, and like I don't really think anything is overly cheesy on this record, but. You know, the vocal sample verges on that for me a little bit. I would say that.
Yeah, it's a weird song because I just feel like Autechre didn't do this again. You know, it's like a weird little left turn that they didn't really ever pursue. It reminds me a little bit of the track Icked Hedgerow off of Aphex Twin's I Care Because You Do, which also has like sort of a string section. But Aphex Twin is like much more interested in combining like recognizable or acoustic sounds into the mixture there. So this is, it's strange. It's like a pretty much, we mentioned how everything's been tweaked with and messed with, but this is, I mean, it's clearly like MIDI strings, but it's like totally unmessed with.
Yeah, those strings are a little cheesy too. You know, they sort of sound 90s. You know, they sound like MIDI-ish and everything.
Yeah.
I feel like if they made this record today, the strings wouldn't make the cut.
Yeah, I don't know. I appreciate that it's a little weird. I honestly can't think of anything to like complain about too much. I'll say that again. Fuck Piezo, whatever the fuck it's called. say it again.
Piezo.
Piezo. Okay.
I think that's right. I'm probably fucking wrong. And, I'm going to look like an asshole. That's how I've always said the contact mic thing.
Okay. Well, whatever it's called, I think that's like a slightly unsuccessful song because, like I said earlier, it is like three different pieces. Like you've got kind of like a glitch style, like weird percussion workout. You've got a sort of string arrangement that is sort of like Silverside, honestly. And then you've got sort of an ambient section that leads like pretty perfectly into Nine, but it doesn't like gel into any one song. I feel like it's like sort of a transition song that is half Glitch and half Nine or something.
Yeah.
But you know, I still think it's like absolutely fascinating and cool. I've heard some complaints, about the let's call them quote unquote interlude tracks here. So we've got Nine and Yolquin, a little weird if they are interlude tracks that they are placed where they are, right? Track seven and Nine. I've heard people complain like they're dangerously close to New Age. I've heard, people on Rate Your Music, they sort of dismiss them like they often do, these kind of like interlude type tracks. It's my opinion that what we complained about with Incunabula a little bit, that like you can clearly tell that some of those transitional tracks, were not as inspired as the main tracks that are around them. To me, these are like just as brilliant. Like there's no difference in quality between them and the quote unquote main tracks.
No, I have no problem with them. I actually like really love Nine. I think it's like a great ambient piece. Yolquin, it's not my favorite on the record, but I have no complaints. You know, I really didn't think that anyone had a problem with it before, you know, reading any of this stuff. And I mean, when they say dangerously close to new age, like, what do they even mean by that? Like Tangerine Dream kind of new age?
Yeah.
or like Inya?
Yeah, you I know, mean, kind also of new age. New age is like cool again. No,
yeah, I love like, Tangerine Dream. I love Terry Riley. I love all that shit. So maybe that's why I like Nine and Yoko.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I think they're just cool tracks. Nine especially is like sick. It's like, you know, and this might be the result of my listening habits in the last couple of days, but it's kind of like Autechre's Eruption. You know that Van Halen song?
Is that the guitar solo one?
Yeah, just the guitar solo where he just demonstrates like the finger tap technique, you know? And it's like, this is kind of just like a synth solo, you know? It's like cool how it's like sometimes like very high, but then like kind of falls down into like these big bass, you know, type things and stuff. And it's like, I don't know. It's just like a sick solo, like just a synth solo, like showing off what you can do, like creating like just this cool little sound world out of just one thing. You know, it's probably multiple things, but I just feel like it's a cool like little demonstration of like how creative they are getting. Let's see, we talked about how Pitchfork said the melodies of Slip haven't aged well, which you agree with. They complain that the sharper aspects of Glitch and Piezo, whatever the fuck, feel dulled and gentle in hindsight. I can't remember.
Pizzo, pizza.
Something like pizza, yeah. They say they feel dulled and gentle in hindsight, knowing just what nasty and brutish sounds they would soon wring out of their gear. Again, the thing that I just hate reading reviews of Incunabula and Amber, like complaining about, you know, comparing it. I mean, do you think it's fair, though, to... I don't know. I mean, we have all this stuff. We can't pretend like we live in this.
I know, but
do you think it's fair?
No, because you can't say like, oh, this song's not that good because they're going to write a song that's way better. You know, like that doesn't make any sense, you know, is I don't know, Blowing in the Wind any less good because, you know, he wrote, you know, Bob wrote Leprechaun Pillbox Hat later, you know, it doesn't make it any less good of a song just because a better song comes out later. Just because they make a more brutish or a more nasty thing, you know, 10, 15 years later, I don't think that takes away from Glitch at all, you know? I think Glitch, like, completely stands on its own, you know, with or without those, you know, kind of things. But, yeah, I think it's completely unfair to judge like how you judge this record based on another record, you know, even looking backwards, you know, I guess if there was a song on Incunabula or something that sounded exactly like Glitch, then you can complain, you know, they're just doing the same thing over again. Like that's a valid complaint, but just saying like, oh, you know, they did something that was, you know, nastier before. Like, I don't know, that seems like a little half-assed to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I can like sort of imagine holding that against an album, but like if they like legitimately just improved upon what they had done there. But I feel like Autechre kind of moves on. Obviously, we'll get into this in future episodes, but this feels like a thing that just like is, you know, it's just they did this and then they sort of traveled into new directions and they built on some of this stuff here. But like, I don't know, it feels like a pretty cohesive thing that like is going to stand up on its own. And I don't feel any need to really compare it to future Autechre. You know, on that note, how about like talking about the cohesion, the sequencing here? We've talked, I think, a little bit about it, but do you agree that it feels more like a proper album than Incunabula, as, you know, Rob seems to think?
You know, Incunabula, all the songs like feel like they're from the same era. You know, they all like flow well, but it is sort of a thing, like, you know, minus a couple things that we talked about, you could sort of shuffle things around a bit and you wouldn't lose too much here. You know, I mean, you could move things around, you know, but I think overall, like, this sounds like a record, you know, it seems like more thematic, you know, it feels like you're entering a world more than Incunabula does or anything. The sequencing itself, like, is maybe not as important as, you know, it'll maybe get later on. Like we said, you know, Slip, I feel like doesn't 100% fit the theme, but like you argued, you know, I think it is a good point that like it's nice to have like the not stretched out to point to the stretching out like later on and everything on the record. So, but I think like, you know, that definitely needs to be in the top half, but I, you know, it doesn't need to be track four, I guess is my point. Like I don't know. Like Foil, I think is a perfect opener. I think it really gets you into this like world here.
Perfectly.
I think tear, whatever is a like excellent closer. Nil is in a great spot. You know, there's a lot of it is in a great spot, but I think the sort of middle meat of it, you could kind of move around and you wouldn't lose too much.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it is like brilliantly cohesive. I like the arrangement here. I could see shifting things around, but yeah, Foil, you know, I didn't mention it, but that would definitely be one of my highlights here because it is like such a great opener. Just like really like, you know, within the first 30 seconds, like, you know, that this is like what you're in for getting into Amber. And I like, yeah, I like kind of the vibe of Slip kind of comes back in like a twisted form in Yolquin. I like how the kind of strings of Silverside seem to kind of come back in Pizza, whatever. You know, that even that snare from Foil seems to come back in that track. You know, I like how the kind of spidery sounds from Further find their way into Tear as well. You know, there's like a lot of like, I just feel like callbacks. On that note, though, I guess I should ask, I guess we're throwing out the rule at this point, but it's like when I think of Odd-Tekker albums, I think of like, I'm about to be introduced into a bunch of incredible sound worlds, you know, like a whole diversity of different planets I've never even heard, you know, imagined. And Amber does feel like an incredible sound world has been created, like genuine sound design, creating a new style and feel, but it's kind of like one sound world, you know, it's like kind of constructed from very similar sounds throughout. I mean, do you see that as a downside or just like, this is might be the most cohesive record that Odd-Tekker ever made?
No, I think, I mean, you know, you gotta crawl before you walk kind of thing. You know, you can't jump straight from Incunabula straight into building, you know, these sound universes, you know. I think it's kind of a shitty complaint to be like, well, they only built one goddamn sound world here. I need a whole, you know, system at least. You know, I think it's just, you know, we're not quite there yet. But also, yeah, I think that this is like definitely one of the like most cohesive Odd-Tekker albums. I don't know if that's just by design or luck, you know, or whatever, but I think, you know, creating just this one world like does make cohesion. You know, you lose sort of that cohesion when an album's 8 hours or 6 hours or whatever. You know, like it's hard to do that for anything, you know.
I mean, I feel like it makes it kind of a cool snapshot of where they were. It's like it's just like a very cohesive piece that it just feels like very effortful, like they put a lot of work into like making this exactly how they wanted it to be in 1994. On that note, I did want to talk a little bit about the context of this album. We talked about, you know, sort of the birth of IDM and the artificial intelligence series and stuff last time. You know, something that kind of came to my attention, I don't know why I never like really noticed, but in 1994, it feels like you get this absolute blossoming of like ambient electronic music. You get Aphex Twin Selected Ambient Works Volume 2, Global Communications 7614. You get the Future Sound of London's Life Forms. Oval put out a great record that year. You know, you get like a lot of like very ambient electronic music, which is kind of interesting. Do you see Amber as like part of that kind of blossoming of ambient electronic here?
I mean, I think Amber is like definitely where Odd-Tekker sort of pulls away from the pack of Warp and everything. Like, whereas Incunabula, like, sort of, you know, it sounded like it fit in the family. I think they're pulling away here. I mean, definitely, you know, I can hear some of the Selected Ambient Works kind of thing going on there. You know, maybe a little bit of Global Communication. I really did like, I didn't realize Oval had a record in 94, but I really did think of Oval a bit during this. And I don't want to jump ahead, but a little bit with the EP that we'll talk about here in a little bit and stuff too.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I don't think like they're especially this early in the career, I think it's hard to be like completely isolated and completely like in your own, you know, realm the way they sort of are now. You know, they're still coming. I mean, this is only their second record, you know, they're still kind of coming up. I'm sure they're still sort of, you know, learning to some extent. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, this kind of equipment and stuff is very expensive. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, these people aren't kind of sharing things. You know, I don't know that for a fact, you know, nobody quote me or anything, but, you know, I would not be surprised if, you know, I'm sure all these people are friends or at least, you know of each other and all, you know. I don't think the ambient electronic scene was huge in 1994, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder, like, you know, I was like listening to a little interview between Sean Lennon and Paul McCartney this week, and, you know, he was kind of observing that, like, the first solo albums of a lot of the Beatles, they seem to kind of still be on the same wavelength even though they're not working together anymore, you know. Like, so the first Lennon album and the first McCartney album are both these kind of like stripped down, you know, raw, like kind of home recording. Like, they were like still on the same wavelength even though they couldn't stand each other. And I just kind of wonder if, like, the electronic music scene, you know, it was kind of like a close scene. They were like kind of working on to similar ends, and then in 1994 you see them, they start to kind of go their own ways, but they're still kind of like, they still kind of got the same mindsets, and it's just like sort of interesting that they all sort of seem to move into like more ambient textural territory at the same time. And then, but you're right, it's like they're pulling away from each other. Like, by the time we get to like 1995, 1996, like Autechre and Aphex Twin aren't going to sound anything alike, but they're like still, they're still a little bit like in the same world. But damn, what a year, 1994, with all these records.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Okay. So we talked about, I don't know, possible hints toward future Autechre a little bit. I don't know if we need to spend a ton of time on it, but it's like, yeah, I was struck in particular by like the, you know, like the tear slowdown there, which is like something I think they're going to do a lot on, like, I don't know, Chiastic Slide, however you pronounce that. They do a lot of these, like, you know, let's just like totally like transform and open up a song right in the middle by changing its timing. They do that on LP5 as well, you know. So I heard a lot of that stuff that I thought was cool, and I honestly felt like Slip, you know maybe if you don't like the melody or say it sounds a little bit unoriginal, it still has like a lot more fluidity. Like, I just feel like they're just getting better at their craft, you know. If like,
oh yeah, Abula, definitely everything
sounded pretty stiff, like Slip like really bounces, you know. It's something we haven't talked a lot about yet, but there are going to be some Autechre tracks in future episodes that like are funky, you know, like genuinely, like genuinely slap. And Slip slaps.
Yeah, no I completely agree. You know, there are definitely like some Autechre, you know, tracks and everything that, you know, if they were in, you know, normal time signatures or whatever, they like could be you know, very dancey. And I think Slip is one that you could maybe get away with playing at the club or something.
Yeah. I just feel like they I don't know, they're getting like better at, like, you know, it feels like it doesn't feel like just a bunch of loops like layered on top of each other. It feels like a really like just synthesized kind of like gelling, you know, thing. And yeah, again, a lot of these tracks are just like, they just feel so fine-tuned that they like, I don't know, I'm just not thinking about individual components all that much. So let's kind of sum up on Amber. You know, how did it go revisiting it this week? Did you have any like new revelations? Did you kind of change your feeling about it at all?
No, I mean, like I said, that this, you know, unlike you, this is a record that I do come to a lot, you know, even when I'm not in an Autechre kind of mood. So I was sort of like already, you know, pretty innately familiar with it and everything. So I didn't really come to any big surprises with myself or anything. I think I kept the same feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I am happy to report that I feel like I finally have like gotten into Amber, that it was like an absolute delight to like just give it its own due, not to think about, you know, I just refuse to allow myself to listen to like Incunabula at all these past 2 weeks, or even to peek ahead at Tri Repetae or anything. I was like, just Amber and the Anti-EP, which we'll talk about in a minute. But like, you know, it's, I don't know, I was just like very, very impressed with that. I do think that it is, I agree that it is difficult, and I feel like there's not like a bike or an eggshell that like you can grab onto and then that helps you get into all the other tracks, yeah. You know? And like I said earlier, with individual tracks, there isn't always like a thing that you can latch onto and, you know, figure out where the hell you are, which in some ways is good. Like I was just saying, how it's like, you know, you're just thinking about this whole constructed world you're in, claustrophobic as it sometimes is, but it does make it like a difficult listen, I think. I'm tempted to say, I wonder what you think, that like sometimes this record is maybe a little overworked, like because every sound has been fucked with. It's like sometimes, like I said, getting into like that static white noise thing, and sometimes I'm like, damn man, the delays, this is a little too much delay, don't you think? Like like maybe just a little bit too dense at points. Do you agree with that at all?
I don't know. I mean, that's like what I love about this record so much. So I don't think I agree. You know, like I love those, you know, those crazy delays and the denseness of it and just soaking all the sound in like that. That's what I like about this record. I get why someone could feel that way. It's just that's just like a quality of music that I really appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like it's like a step up in almost every way from Incunabula, mm-hmm. but it's like by design, it's a little difficult. And it's also interesting, right? That like in 1994, Select and Ambient Works 2, that is like a deliberately difficult yeah. album. 7614, you know, just like Saw 2 is like, you know, give us some damn track titles so it's easier to get into this. Like now they're just going to be numbers, you know, it's just going to tell you how long the song is. Like, it's like, there's a little bit going on in that scene at that time where it was like, our listeners are gonna have to work for this shit, and I feel like Amber is no different.
Yeah, I mean, I you don't call, you know, a scene intelligent dance music for no reason, you know. And we went over that whole thing, but last episode. But you know, I mean, definitely, they're not. This isn't music that's like the people are trying to make easy for everyone to listen to, you know.
Yeah,
not just Ottekker, but this whole scene. Although this is like the last time that Ottekker does give us some track titles that are you know, true. Easy to grasp onto. I was, you know, thinking about, you know, just throughout the week, I was trying to, you know, really like, it's kind of hard with instrumental music sometimes to like really associate the song with the title, you know, like, so we can talk about it this way. And I was thinking, yeah. like, at least here, you know, it's easy to like, oh, you know, Glitch is the one that's sort of glitchy sounding, you know, and stuff. Mm-hmm. But then like, what the fuck are we gonna do when it's like, you know, B69, you know, Q, yeah, you know, really without fucking slapped, you know, it's gonna get a little harder from here.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess just in summer, I think that it's like, yeah, I mean, I think it's like I'll agree. It's like an Ottekker masterpiece. I mean, I'm interested to see like how I feel as we continue like moving through all these records, but it's like, I feel like it's just, I mean, I sort of said that Incunabula is like kind of a must hear for everybody because of its place in history. I feel like Amber is a must hear just because it's like a really interesting album. I feel like it's challenging to the listener, but it's also, they were challenging themselves making something that was like wholly original. Do you think it's like everybody should hear this, not just Ottekker fans?
Yeah, I think it's like a really, you know, kind of important piece of electronic music. I mean, and just music in general. Like of those, you know, records that you had talked about, like with the ambient electric scene, I think this one and Saw 2 are like sort of the most important ones, you know, for that. I think like you see two things that like clearly come from the same, you know, background or scene or whatever, like we talked about, but then you're seeing them start to pull apart, you know, you're seeing the ways that Aphex Twin will go and the way that, that Amber will end up going Ottekker will end up going. And, I just think like, it's hard to not argue that they are two of the, you know, most important acts in electronic and everything. So yeah, I definitely think that this is like a record everyone should hear. I mean, it really like surprises me that it was a 7.9 from Pitchfork. Yeah. You know, like that's such like a dismissive score, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, we're going to move on to Anti-EP.
Yeah. 2 months before Amber, on September 3rd, 1994, Autechre released the Anti-EP, also on Warp Records. It was billed as a protest against anti-rave legislation that defined objectionable music as, quote, a succession of repetitive beats. The packaging warns that tracks Lost and Darjrum should there with the hard track titles already should not be played in public if the bill becomes law, but that Flutter, quote, has been programmed in such a way that no bars contain identical beats. However, we advise DJs to have a lawyer and musicologist present at all times to confirm the non-repetitive nature of the music in the event of police harassment, end quote. All profits from the Anti-EP went to the political pressure group Liberty, but the packaging clarifies that, quote, Autechre is politically non-aligned. This is about personal freedom. And indeed, this is the only time that Autechre has released an explicit message of the sort.
Yeah, in regard to reception, the Anti-EP is pretty well liked. It's got a 3.49 on Radio Music, respectable. But closing track Flutter is widely regarded as an all-timer. In 2014, Fact named it the greatest IDM track of all time. Was the Anti-EP new to you before these past 2 weeks?
No, I had listened to it. You know, it's included in that EP collection, and I had listened to it on its own. You know, the reputation of Flutter, you know, precedes it. So I was familiar with that. I've never spent so much time with it. As I did this week, though, or 2 weeks.
Yeah. I've certainly listened to it without paying like too much attention to it as its own thing. You know, I just throw on that whole collection pretty often. I've listened to Flutter a lot, just sort of on its own. But this was probably the first time that I was like, you know, going from Lost to Jarum or whatever to Flutter over and over again, and just kind of giving it its own due. How would you describe the sound of the Anti-EP?
I think it's really sort of like an intermediary from Incunabula and Amber. You know, it's definitely like more dancey, which I think is intentional, you know, with the message and everything. But it doesn't have as quite as much of that like jammy, you know, Men Behind the Knob kind of feel to it. You know, there's maybe a little bit there. It doesn't feel quite as labored over as Amber. But it definitely doesn't feel as, you know, loops, twiddled, you know, knobs, kind of as Incunabula feels. You know, it's definitely like a step forward, but still a quite dancey-ish record.
Yeah, I totally recognize that it's sort of a step forward slightly from Incunabula, and that there's like an emphasis on sort of unrecognizable drum sounds, like we were talking about with Amber. In fact, there's, you know, like Lost has this like weird metallic whirl like running through the whole thing. It's just one of those sounds that you're like, what the fuck is this? You know, Jarum has like these weird like screeching yelps or something like running through it. You know, it's an emphasis on like creating, you know, just creating new and interesting sounds, I think, but it does feel a little bit basic. I find it difficult, honestly, to talk about it as its own thing. You know, having like done it and tried to like get into this as an EP, I feel like it's the first two songs and then it's Flutter.
Yeah.
You're kind of in the same boat?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it sort of feels like a 12-inch single, and the singles Flutter and the B-sides are the other two, even though the record's laid out differently than that. But yeah, I mean, it definitely is not like a cohesive piece.
Yeah, it's weird because, I don't know, I have pretty mixed feelings about the first two tracks, honestly. I think they're a little unsuccessful, because I agree that they are like trying to be sort of danceable, like sort of playable in the club. I mean, it would have to be like a trendy as fuck club, for sure, but like people who don't mind like a little avant-garde while they're dancing, but they are still like trying to, I don't know, they're pretty high octane. Like the drums are like always like really, you know, you can really get moving, you know, get your heart beating a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then like, so take Lost. The music part of it feels totally disconnected to me from the percussion. Like the percussion is for the club. The music is like this ghostly, thin, like synth line with like lots of empty space, some weird, like wordless female like Oz and stuff, like again, like sort of like digital artifact, like messed with. It's like kind of sad sounding. Like, I don't know how I'd feel dancing to this shit, because it's like pretty like haunting and depressing in a weird way. It just feels like it's a melody and a beat. They had nothing to do with each other, and they were just kind of like laid on top of each other. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they have like a little bit of a disjointed kind of feel, you know. It's not like the most successful of tracks. I think it's kind of perfect for an EP like this, you know. Inconsequential kind of thing, you know. The start of the show here is definitely Flutter. You know, you got to throw two other things on, and you know, Loss isn't bad. It's a little unsuccessful, I think is the word to use.
Yeah, it doesn't like gel to me. And it just feels like an act that had moved on from the club, and then for some reason is like, you know, I mean, for this political reason, is like taking a little look back into that world, and yeah. They're trying to apply the lessons they've learned back into the club scene, and it's like a little awkward. I think Jarum is probably my least favorite here. It's like, there's some interesting parts for sure. It's got like sort of a strange like dubby quality to it, like a lopsided kind of like bass line and beat and stuff. I think it gets particularly cool when this, like, you know, I wrote harpsichord ... because I don't know how to describe the sound, but like the sound, like buzzy sound kind of like joins that like weird lopsided bass line at the end and like gets really, really interesting to me. But like that like sort of yelping sound is, I don't know, it's annoying to me like after 2 minutes or something.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that's definitely my least favorite track on this EP. It's the one that I think is the least successful here. Right. It has like a dubby kind of feel, which is nice. You know, there's cool things about it. It's worth a listen, but you know, we're doing better than Cavity Job, but you know, we're I don't think we're up to the standards of Amber or anything yet.
Yeah, I think both of these songs would be, like, if they were on Incunabula or Amber, they would be, like, my least favorite tracks on those records.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
And I know that we're going to get into Autechre EPs that are, like, much more celebrated as entire pieces, but I know that this EP has its defenders, for sure, but I feel like Flutter is the, you know, the thing that people come for. So let's talk about Flutter. I mean, how would you describe how Flutter sounds?
You know, it's supposed to be like, you know, completely non-repetitive and stuff, but it doesn't like feel like that 100%. You know, you would think like a song that has no repetitive bars would right. feel like completely disjointed and stuff, but it really, like, the melodies like do seem to you know, kind of loop and repeat. It's the drums that like completely do not. But it doesn't sound like when you describe that, I feel like, you know, you think it's going to sound just like somebody who doesn't know how to play drums, like sitting at a drum set and just, you know, randomly hitting. And it doesn't sound like that at all. In fact, I think I read one of the guys said that it was basically like they just went through their drum machine and had all these patterns, you know, that they hadn't used and strung them all together. But it really doesn't even sound like that. Like, it really does sound like, you know, their little joke about having a musicologist present. I think, like, you really would have to, really tell that there's no repetitive beats. I think you would have to, like, you know, understand music quite a bit. It sounds like a lot more, you know, normal than you think it's going to sound from that, that description.
I think part of that is that it's got like an incredibly simple melody, like very wisely. It's got just such a simple, like a melody that I would describe as cute, you know, like something like you would like play to like help your like little kid go to sleep or something, like on your little toy keyboard or something. Like it's so simple, and it's just very repetitive, and it's pretty calming. It's like pretty tender, and it just ties the whole thing together because you've got these like frantic, I mean, like, skittering drum patterns going. And I agree that, like, I don't know, if you're just sort of like listening and not paying like close attention, you might not even notice that it's changing every bar or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like making like subtle little changes. And if you really focus in, it's like, it's just an incredible, mixture of like this very like peaceful, calming sort of synth melody. I think another little synth like joins for some very pretty harmonies toward the end. And then you've got like this like just absolutely frantic like thing, like chaos, but it's so chaotic that it doesn't sound, it sounds perfectly at home here somehow. I feel like they were gonna be smart asses and then just accidentally made something fucking brilliant. Like they were just like, wow, this is a dumb law, let's make a track that never repeats. And then they were like, this is actually such a good song that we've made, like you know, I'm probably like built on it from there and stuff. I feel like the whole, like, it's got a very long fade out, like an incredibly long fade out for some reason. But that whole thing is kind of like, it just kind of adds like a sense of grandeur to the song. And I just feel like they recognized that this was like kind of a masterpiece that they have had stumbled upon. It sort of looks ahead to what was honestly like my first love in electronic music, is kind of the drill and bass scene with, like, you know, Aphex's like Richard D. James album and Square Pusher's Hard Normal Daddy, Plug, Drum and Bass for Papa and stuff. Like those really have like absolutely frenetic drum patterns that are like changing constantly, and yet it's incredible because you kind of need software to do that right, and they do it here like somehow in like a very hardware way. I think that's mind-blowing.
Yeah I agree. It is like, I do think you're right. Or at least it seems like, you know, they were kind of just trying to be smart asses and lucked onto, or maybe are just so talented that, you know, they actually, you know, fucked up and wrote a good song.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so I've seen people like sort of complain. I don't know who these people are, but like, I've seen comments where people are complaining this is like a novelty track because it's kind of just like a, you know, a little protest track. Like it's meant to sort of expose the absurdity of this law, you know, that what is the problem with repetition? Like even without repetition, like it still slaps. And, you know, repetition is like a musical tool just like any other, you know, and like, but I feel like it's just obviously so much more than that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think like people are quick to label it that, you know, because it comes with this message that like explicitly states it. I honestly think if they didn't say that on there, I think a good deal of people would never really like realize that, you know, that it doesn't repeat, you know, it doesn't sound like so, you know, crazy and chaotic like you would think something like that would. So I think it's like solely because of that message that people are just being smart asses or you know, whatever.
It would be the kind of thing where like in 2020 or something, some like musicologist would be like, holy shit, guys, I just realized that it never repeats. And everybody
holy shit. Oh man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If they didn't come out and say it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it does add like this really just incredible like energy to this track. I mean, it feels like it should fall apart, but it's just got like this endless momentum. Even like, cause sometimes, you know, like it's like the drums like drop out and you just get like the bass drum being like boom, 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 you know? Mm-hmm. And like, it's still just, it like is propulsive. It's like absolutely, you know, I mean, it does give me like some of the same feelings as some of the drill and bass stuff that I love, but it's like, it's just, again, incredible that they pulled it off in like a hardware way. And I feel like they didn't try to push it into like the absolute insanity that some of like that Richard D. James album stuff gets into. It's got like kind of a cool lo-fi-ness to it. There's like a weird, like kind of scratchy, like almost vinyl type sound running over this whole thing, like mixed into the drum pattern and stuff. And I don't know, it gives it like this cool, like kind of timeless classic, but also very forward looking vibe. I just think it's like brilliant.
Yeah, I agree.
So do you think, you know, the question is, do you think that anything on Amber or Incunabula is better than Flutter? Is Flutter the best song that Autechre had made up to this point?
No, I think I like things on Amber more than I like Flutter. I think Flutter is, you know, top tier, especially early Autechre, but I don't think it is like top of the top tier, you know?
Yeah. I mean, do you think that they like learned something from Flutter that then, I mean,
definitely.
You have to assume they were working on, Amber at the same time because these came out so close together, you know, but like, I don't know. I feel like they sort of stumbled upon like this kind of mind-blowing idea that would be really important to Autechre in the future, which is like sometimes repetition isn't just about repetition. It's about like different permutations of the same, you know, pattern.
Yeah, it's like you can repeat without like literally repeating, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I think that's, I mean, that seems to be like such a building block of, you know, Autechre later on. I mean, like I mentioned with Glitch on Amber, you know, it like is so minimal and it like is repeat, you know, I feel like if you just have it on in the background, it feels like, you know, a handful of bars or whatever, just like sort of looping for however long, but it really isn't that like at all, you know, and under close inspection, you know, you see that things are glacially changing and coming in and out and just subtly, you know, moving. And, you know, that's sort of like what Flutter is. If they didn't tell you that it is constantly changing, I think like you would not be so quick to realize that. And, you know, that sort of becomes a, you know, trope of Autechre, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I was even like jotting down on the track Nil, that like, it feels like these like snare hits and stuff. There's like sometimes they're longer than others. Like they're actually, like, it feels like two different snares going on, but sometimes like, one is like very submerged, like with a low pass filter kind of feel. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it just feels like it's probably not true, but it feels like no hit of these snare sounds is exactly the same, you know, that it's like,
yeah,
always sort of evolving and stuff. And I just feel like maybe Flutter was like an eye opening moment for them. Because I do hear a lot about that, like more about permutation than pure repetition. You know, and we both loved like the repetition on Incunabula, but it was certainly not like really permutation.
No, you know what I mean? it was like literal repetition. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so on the CD, the track has always been released at 45 RPM and digitally as well. But the packaging notes that this song can be played at both 45 and 33 and a third RPM. There is a helpful YouTube video of Flutter played at 33. What is it? Revolutions per minute? Rotations per minute?
Revolutions, yeah.
Revolutions. Okay. Did you check that out? What did you think about that?
Yeah, I did. You know, it's cool. I think it gave it like a really sort of kind of glitchy sound to it. It really like that. That's what sort of reminded me the most of like Oval, like, you know, 94. Connect or whatever, however the fuck you say yeah. That record, you know, where it has like that, those digital artifacting, you know, like they cut up like CDs or right, whatever, right. Like it sort of like made that like shiny, shimmery, like kind of noise come yeah. through a little bit sometimes in the 33 and a third version, and it definitely like slowed down the freneticness of the drums and everything. You know, it definitely makes it different, you know.
Yeah, it was a little eye-opening for me, honestly, because, you know, I mentioned that there seems to be a lot of emphasis on, like, slowing down and stretching out sounds on Amber, mm-hmm. you know, like, you can totally hear that they're doing that. And it was interesting to hear Flutter slow down, which I'd never heard this before, and just realized that it sounds a lot like Amber when it's played at this speed.
Yeah, true.
Amber is, like, pretty glacial, pretty slow, like we mentioned, and you listen to Flutter, I mean, I think of it as like a hit, like the closest thing that like Autechre can make to a hit, you know, it's like so immediately catchy. And that like very pretty, like synth line just like carries you through this whole like crazy, crazy thing. But when you slow it down, that little synth melody, it has like maybe a little bit too much space in between notes. It's like not grabbing you as much. And you start to like lose track of where you are a little bit more. And of course, like the drum hits are a little bit more sustained, a little bit more stretched out at a slower speed. And it reminds me of Amber in those like sort of drawn out percussive hits that are almost melodic, you know, like mm-hmm. there's a lot of phaser and stuff on the like hi-hat sounds and stuff on Flutter. And they, you know, they reach that kind of like white noisy staticky feel when slowed down that I heard a lot on Amber. It almost honestly made me think, you know, this is like pure just headcanon shit, but I was just like thinking, I bet they composed some of the stuff on Amber at like a slightly faster clip and then just decided to like stretch it out, you know, so that it would be a little bit more immersive and you know, just dense and weird. Could you imagine that?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, don't want to spoil myself, but I've done that with you know, songs that I've made. You know, you just if it sounds okay, you know, I make like droney types thing. If you just slow it down, sounds way better a lot of times. You know, so if yeah. if I've figured out that trick, I would imagine Autechre also figured it out.
yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to maybe them being interested in being a little challenging, being a little extra challenging this go around. Okay, so I mean, is it weird to hear them getting political? I feel like it's not really like a political record. I mean, it's like kind of a, you know, it's kind of like a neat thing. I understand why they care about it. Sounds like some bullshit legislation. I don't know that much about British politics, but just to harass the kind of like, you know, riffraff that would go to an electronic, yeah, you know, dance show or something. You know, it just feels like maybe they were kind of just like, I don't know, exploring sounds and thought, let's support the cause. I don't think it's weird at all.
No, I don't think it's weird at all. I mean, like you said, it's sort of like the cause you could imagine them getting behind. And it's not like political in the sense, you know, if there was like a you know, sample of some politician talking or you know, something like that, like that would be, you know, over the top. It's a song. If you didn't read that label, you know, if you didn't read about this song, you wouldn't like say, yeah, hey, hold on a second, that sounds very political to me. You know, it doesn't sound like it at all, you know. And I don't think it's a shock to know, you know, or to see why they would, you know, get in on something like this. Like, even though they, you know, aren't making, you know, specifically like club music anymore, you know, I'm sure they like come from that world, or at least support that world, you know, kind of thing. It makes complete sense.
Yeah. And, you know, on the other hand, though, I've seen people like really, really praise Flutter and call it like the first postmodern protest song or something, like, you know, if you're thinking about like a list of like the 50 greatest protest songs ever made, that like this should be pretty high because it's so brilliant. I mean, I don't know. To me, it's like all these years later, it's like just kind of a masterstroke of composition. And even if that was their original idea, was to like sort of protest this, it's a little bit secondary to the music itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Is the Anti-EP top tier Autechre? Is like a must hear for all Autechre fans, or how are you feeling about that?
I mean, I would say no, because, you know, the first two tracks are really sort of fan only, you know, kind of not necessarily throwaway, but, you know, it's not something everyone needs to hear. But I think Flutter is like sort of so kind of important, and such a, you know, a good track that Autechre fans like definitely do need to hear. So, you know, I would say that if Flutter alone makes Anti, you know, an important, you know, kind of top tier for Autechre fans to hear.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, I can just freely admit that I just haven't spent as much time as I should have on the EPs of Autechre. More of an album guy just in my life in general. So I'm looking forward to some of like the later EPs that are a little bit more of those like classic EPs. I feel like this is, kind of a mixed bag that's mostly remembered for this one, like really, really iconic must hear kind of track. So to wrap up on our main conversation here, our ongoing or pretty new ranking project, you know, we sort of discussed that maybe it doesn't make sense to rank the Cavity Job EP, maybe not even Lego Feet, but are you ranking Anti-EP? Do you think that's a rank-worthy release?
I think it kind of is because of Flutter. You know, Flutter is like sort of, I said, like sort of important to the, you know, the overall, you know, mystique or aesthetic of Autechre, that it sort of makes it rank worthy. You know, I don't think it'll end up near the top or anything, since, you know, 2/3 of the EP are kind of throwaway. But I think it sort of makes it rank worthy.
Okay, well, I'll say that it's not so hard yet. It will get hard later on. We'll actually have to start writing this down.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, because I haven't either.
But I think I'm going to pretty easily go Amber, which is interesting. I never would have thought that Amber was better than Incunabula before these past 2 weeks. But I'm going like a firm Amber, Incunabula. I'm probably going Lego Feet and then the Anti-EP.
Yeah, I actually would completely agree with that too. I enjoy like the entire Lego Feet EP much more. Too. You know, I would put that on its own, you know, just for listening pleasure. Whereas Anti, you know, I listen to it more, you know, in the context of that collection and you know, really just there for Flutter. So I completely agree with your list. My mind would be the same so far.
All right. Any closing thoughts on this chapter of the Autechre journey? Do you think it was useful to be listening to Amber and the Anti-EP at the same time? Like they speak together and, you know, to each other in some way?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, you know, like you were talking about with Flutter, I think the 45-33, I mean, it's either a joke you know, or I think like you're right, you know, they may have stumbled on something with the slowing things down and everything.
Yeah.
I think they definitely can go together.
All right. We're ready to move on to some listener emails?
Yeah.
All right. We've gotten just a few listener emails so far. That's okay. It's early days, but we'd like a lot more. Send us your thoughts about the albums and EPs we're talking about, the hidden gems we might miss, or honestly, anything that's on your mind. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at GonkCastPod. Okay. First email is from Josh, who said he loved the podcast. Thank you. But he couldn't find it on Grover, his podcast app of choice. I know this isn't that interesting, but I only bring it up to say that if you can't find GonkCast on your preferred podcast app, please just email us and let us know. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. We will fix that shit. Okay, next email, a real one. This one's from Demo, who writes, Autechre can consider their first releases as cheesy as they want. Maybe it's just because I have a soft spot for ambient techno, but both of these albums can transport me to different places far beyond what other albums in this style can. He also says that his favorite tracks from Incunabula are Autriche, Lowride, and 444. Any thoughts about that? I mean, it's interesting because, I don't know, do you think of these two albums as like, if we're thinking this style, this kind of like early 90s electronic style, that these are like some of the best there is to offer?
I mean, I definitely do with Amber. You know, I agree with him. I think it sets itself apart from, you know, like I like that, you know, Global Communication record. You know, I love Saw 2 and everything, but I think Amber, you know, just like really is of a different world. You know, it's probably my favorite of, you know, that whole scene. I don't know if I would put Incunabula in such like a grandiose way. You know, I feel like it, they're still getting their feet wet. They're still learning. It's definitely like a much better record as you would think, you know, someone's first album would be. I think it's definitely interesting, but I don't know if I think it's like completely otherworldly or incredibly different, you know, from the other things of the era.
Yeah, I've started doing this thing where, like, because I don't want to, you know, listen to other Autechre albums, you know, I just want to like really give mm-hmm. these records we're talking about their due, but I'll be like still in the mood, but I don't want to break that rule. So then I've just started like listening to, you know, the other electronic classics that came out that same year. So I was like listening to a lot of like Global Communication and Saw 2 and stuff. A little Music, who has like the most annoying name in all of music. I can't remember his real name, but Mike something, Paladinus or something like that. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, this is, I guess I would have to say that like, I probably like Saw 2 and that Global Communication record more than Amber slightly, but Amber does feel like incredibly unique, like just incredibly necessary. I don't even understand why, I don't know. Clearly I didn't totally mean to say it, but that, you know, they called it cheesy. I mean, I don't know. Just nothing about this. Maybe like some of the 808 sounds and stuff on Incunabula, but nothing about Amber is cheesy.
No, I mean, yeah, it, like I was sort of like searching for that in the midst of listening to this. And I mean, I guess though, like when you look back at your own art, I'm sure like, especially when you're a band like Autechre who has like really like evolved into something else, like, you know, maybe you get like some sort of like self-consciousness about it and it kind of becomes cheesy to yourself.
Yeah.
But I think to the rest of the world, I struggle to find very many cheesy things, you know, like I pointed out those string samples, but that's literally like me like looking for what is cheesy. You know, I don't think it would jump out at me any other way.
Yeah, I wonder if Autechre, when they play live, if they ever get like dickheads being like, play Eggshell.
Yeah, probably.
Probably not that kind of band. All right, next email was from Nick, who writes, my personal recommendation would be Gescom, Sounds of the Machines Our Parents Used. It's admittedly an Autechre side project, but as you covered Lego Feed and asked for Hidden Gems, I definitely say it qualifies. It's an album I constantly revisit and always enjoy. Not their most complex work, but some of the most beautiful up there with Amber. I've never listened to Gescom. I feel like we should maybe plan on, like, after we do the main run, we'll do some of these like extra episodes, and we should probably do like a full Gescom episode, although it seems like there's a lot of Gescom stuff. Are you familiar with it at all?
You know, I've run through it all. Basically, like when NTS was coming out and everything, like I got real obsessed and I like downloaded everything that I could possibly find that they've ever done. I'm not like overly familiar with Gescom. I know like Minidisc the most, I think. But this record is a good one that he suggested, and you know, they have a lot of like singles and EPs, so it's not like a ton of stuff. I think we definitely, I would like to do an episode on it, you know, in the future, yeah. You know, maybe not chronologically, mostly just because I would like to know it a little better, you know.
Yeah.
But it's definitely good stuff, especially for, you know, a side project kind of thing. You know, it's not like throw away or anything like that. You know, I think it can stand on its own at least sometimes.
Yeah. All right. We will definitely do a Gescom episode at some point. And it's good to know, Nick, that Sounds of the Machines Our Parents Used is something we should specifically make sure we get to on that episode. All right. Last email. This episode has gone a little long. I think there are going to be plenty of episodes in this series that go way longer than this. So get used to it. But this one is from Brandon, who said some kind things about the show. Thank you. And asked, is there any way you can play quick clips under 15 seconds to give a short sample of the tracks without getting in trouble? I thought we should bring this up, Dan. It's a little tricky, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't really know the rules, and it's a little hard to find out. But we've mentioned, we have another podcast called Pop Shield, and we used to do one before that. And I always upload like these episodes and the episodes from our other podcasts. I always put them on YouTube, and we originally, when we first started doing podcasts, we would play clips because it, you know, makes sense. And sometimes it would get yanked from YouTube and I would get in trouble, and sometimes it wouldn't. And you know, it's not like, oh yeah, you know, you put a Beyonce clip. Like sometimes it would be like, you know, kind of obscure things. So I don't know what the hell, you know, the rules are. It just honestly became easier to not put them. I was getting too many strikes and was gonna get our account banned from YouTube. And I mean, I really, really wish that we could. I guess if someone's a lawyer and wants to tell me.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there are any musicologists or lawyers,
yeah, exactly.
Let us know how we can get away with it.
Yeah, because I really don't. You know, I feel like Autechre, they don't seem like they would care if you were playing a 15-second clip, but I mean, maybe Warp does. I think sometimes it's just like the computer of YouTube is doing it. I don't know. It's annoying, and you know, we don't get paid for this or anything, so I don't want to have to take the clips out to put it on YouTube. So you're getting the same show anywhere you listen to it.
All right.
Well, I guess that is it for this week. Tell us, what do you think about Amber and the Anti-EP? Email us gonkcastpod@gmail.com. We'll have our next regular episode in 2 weeks where we'll be talking about Tri-Repete, Garbage, and Anvil Vapor. But like we said, we're going to do an emergency sign episode. You know, now that it's officially out, we've got it. We're listening to it. We're early next week. You know, we just want to get our initial sort of thoughts. So send us your opinions on Tri-Repete, Garbage, Anvil Vapor, Signs. You know, we'd love to read some emails during that. All that again, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out by subscribing. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Stay connected. Twitter, Instagram, both of those are @gonkcastpod. And we'll see you soon.
See ya.